Hi, welcome to Fire Grind Strategies and Other Stuff from the Street with Anthony Avillo and Jim Duffy on Fire Engineering Talk Radio, where firefighters come to share their knowledge, their ideas, their opinions, and most of all, have a little bit of fun at the same time. So stay tuned and enjoy the show.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. Had a little technical difficulty for a second. I moved my computer okay. And it cut me off. Okay.
Oh, boy.
So I missed the whole intro there on thing. Hello, everybody. Welcome to January 2022's Fire Ground Strategies and Other Stuff from the Street on Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Chief Avillo, how are you doing tonight?
Happy New Year, my brother, and happy anniversary. Hey, how long have we been doing this show?
We've been doing it almost right from the beginning. I don't remember.
You know, that's got to be 5 or 6 years, right?
Oh, easily. You know what? I can look it up because I think you can look in the archives, and they all the shows are saved. So, it's interesting to me now, but like later on, I'm going to be like, it's going to slip my mind. I'm not going to think about it, but I'm going to check. I'm going to say easily that long.
Easily that long, right? All good. What a pleasure to do this show. You know what?
How
are you, my brother?
It's been a lot of fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed it. Sometimes it and this is not a complaint. Sometimes it gets in the way because whatever, you know, you got family stuff going on, you're away on vacation. But we always manage to do it. We get a lot of people listening, I think we've got a pretty good, interesting show tonight. One of the first things I'd like to, say a prayer for firefighter Paulson's family from St. Louis. What a terrible, terrible thing that was, for many reasons. His father's a retired captain from St. Louis, you know, following his father's footsteps. Obviously a good friend of ours is the captain of that company, and, you know, and that's pretty tough. I can't even imagine, you know, that happening to me. You know, and both of us are retired, and we made it to the end of our careers without losing anybody under our command or under our leadership, and it's something I thank God for all the time, you know, and I know you do, too.
It's got to be the hardest part of the job, no doubt whatsoever, total condolences from our show to the family and the St. Louis Fire Department.
Yep, especially that crew, you know. Those crews in some departments in New York, they switch on and off all the time, but the same guys work together all the time, much like, you know, where I worked in Wallingford, you know, engine two crew, shift one is pretty much always the same guys. And that's pretty tough, you know, and, as you know, Larry,
family.
Say again?
It's family.
Yes, it is. And sometimes it's beyond family, you know. It's pretty crazy, you know. You get to know their kids' names, their wives' names, you know. And although I think we're losing that a little bit with the cell phone usage, I don't think firehouses are as tight as they used to be. But they're still really, really tight. It's still family. You know, you face the stuff that we face, you have to become close, just like the military, you know, a little different, but the same.
When the alarm goes off, you got to put the phone down.
Thank God. I think sometimes they would, if they could phone it in, they would, you know, or text the job in.
Yeah, exactly.
the weather has been insane. You know, the cold, I mean, there's been so many fires in the last week. I know in Passaic they had that big one. They had a couple of big ones in Mineola. Today in Massachusetts, right on the ocean.
Yeah.
You know, they lost, I don't know, 5 or 6 buildings right on the water.
Was that Brockport or something like that?
Salisbury. Salisbury.
Salisbury.
Okay. Just north of Boston. It's a resort mm-hmm. community. You know, and, you know, there are all those wood frame buildings with, you know, 20, 30
yeah.
mile an hour winds. There's not much stopping it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and then you had the issue. You know, the incident in New York City, the incident in Philadelphia, you know, multiple fatalities, you know,
yep.
Unfortunately, a very, very difficult part of the job to have to face.
It is. And you know that I've said that, you know, I guarantee those firefighters are almost as heartbroken as the family and friends of those lost. You know, there are no do-overs in firefighting, you know, so it's not like, you know, down, done, over. You can't do that, you know, or challenge the play or appeal the decision. You know, you go there.
Yeah.
Our job is to save lives, put the fire out, and go on and high-five each other on the front lawn and put the hose away. After something like that, you know, it's tough to live with. And what I might add to that is, you know, most of us have lost people at fires we've been at. Some people don't handle it as well as others, and some people at different times in their life and career don't handle it well. So to people who've been through that and or are having difficulties, people say bad calls, if you need help, ask for it. And if you're
yeah.
a brother, you know, and you think someone needs help, offer it. Just definitely say, hey, are you okay, you know? And he says, yeah, I'm just fine. Well, you know what? Dig a little deeper. How do you feel after, you know, that pediatric code last night? You know, or whatever it is. You know, medical call, fire call. Try to help them out, you know.
Yeah, the critical incident stress. It's real stuff, man. It really is.
It is real.
Sneak up on you.
Well, you know what? We all know of people who have taken their own life. I personally know 2 in the Connecticut area that have taken their lives, and they were all very, very dedicated leaders, and you would never know. And I know another one who tried but was unsuccessful and is doing really, really well now. So that's okay, plus all the ones we hear about. It's the fire service's dirty little secret. You know, and, you know, I think we should just reach out and take care of each other. But let's switch to a lighter note instead of all of this tragedy. We're going to see a lot of each other over the next several months. We're going to see you in like 2.5 weeks in Missouri at Missouri
yep.
University, right? Looking forward
yes.
to that. That's always... That's one of the tough ones, though. It's like, you know, class Saturday morning, lunch, class Saturday afternoon, class Sunday morning, get on the airplane and fly. You know, it's like boom, 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 boom. You know, that's
yeah.
That's a little – that's work. But you know what? I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
All the people are going to see.
Oh,
going to see
great,
Larry Connolly, Jim Silvernail, Brian. You know, there's – It's a good conference,
yeah.
you know, lunch and the,
is,
the evening
Frank
dinner.
Is
I don't think so.
No, yeah, I wasn't
Frank
sure. I'm not sure exactly
sick.
Who is going to be there. But?
Yeah, I know Mike Galliano is going to be there.
Good.
Dave Dotson is going to be there. He hardly teaches at all anymore, but he's going to be there. Jim Silvernail, Brian, Jason Hovelman. There's
nice.
A lot of people going to be there, so I'm looking forward to
yeah.
that. You know,
is that where you
post-COVID
first
shuffle
drink on Mike Galliano's wife?
You know
is
what?
That
I think
Missouri.
It was.
I think it was.
I think it was. It was Missouri. You are correct.
I think so.
And thank
so,
you for bringing that up. Speaking of
whatever one it
speaking
was,
of post-incident
you didn't do
stress.
Last year.
No, I did not.
Whatever one it was, you didn't do last year. That's why I'm not sure if it was Missouri, but I think it was.
It was Missouri. I can even see the table.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it was like that. Have you seen that commercial where the woman's looking at the future boyfriends on her phone, and she spills the drink, and it goes towards the iPad or whatever? That's what it was like, slow
yeah.
motion. No,
no, exactly.
Speaking of
was,
PTSD, though,
it was as funny
yeah.
as it gets, though, I have to say.
Well, I tell you what, at the moment, I was like mortified. I was like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So where else am I going to see you? Well, we have the FDIC in April.
We're going to
– which everybody's looking
yep,
forward
to. In March, we're going to see in New London. You're going to be doing a shorter program for New London.
March. I thought they pushed that back to May.
I'm sorry, it's May. You are correct. They moved it to May. That's
yeah,
fun.
I'm not sure if I'm even doing that one.
I think you are.
I'm not 100% sure. The guy said he'd get back to me. They do have Nick Papa coming in.
Oh, he.
But he said
he told me.
You know, he said if you
he
want.
He told me split in the afternoon.
Oh, yes.
He
okay.
told me
he
split
said
in the afternoon with you too.
Okay, that's fine. Fine.
You better
okay,
call.
So, yeah,
you better
so
call
be
and make sure.
Yeah, I gotta call. I gotta call and figure that one out.
And then I'm gonna see you at FDIC, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully I'll get to see you in Syracuse for the New York State Chiefs show.
Yeah.
With
yeah,
Sue
I got a
and,
bunch of gigs,
that crew.
Gigs in Florida, but I don't know if I'm going to see you down there.
No, I try to stay away
I'm
from
not
Florida.
Sure. Are you going to the Ozarks?
I am not. How about you?
Nah, I got turned down. That one in the Mile High Conference, I got turned down.
Yep, those are two that I want to do that I keep getting turned down for.
I've never put in for them before, but... Yeah, I got turned down. I was talking to Sean Duffy. He's like, are you kidding me? Do you want me to go over there and straighten people out? I was like, no, no. No, that's right. Your son,
you know
Sean
what?
Duffy.
They, yeah, not my son. But I'd be proud to be associated with him. Good guy.
Yeah, good kid. Up and coming like Nick Papa.
Yep, and that's what I think the Revolutionary Fire Tactics is about. It's mostly up and comers. Very few people who've been around do that show, and that's the whole thing it's about, Revolutionary Fire Tactics. And I don't fit that mold, and I'm okay with it. You know, and,
yeah, it's cool.
You can't do everyone. I don't want to do everyone. They're great people. So, you
yeah,
know,
you
maybe next year
up.
I'll put in for it.
It's
maybe
sure.
I won't. I don't know. You know, and then then May and June, and then we're starting all over again.
Yep. Hey, I talked to Frank
so anyway,
the other day.
Yeah.
And he's writing a book.
Good. He needs to. He's kind of
yeah,
he's kind
book
of
on...
pulled back a lot, you know, with his. Oh, that's right. He asked me about a chapter or helping him with a chapter. I forgot about that.
Yeah, he just sent me his first couple of chapters. He wants me to, you know, do a little bit in it. So, yeah, I told him I definitely would. I hope. I just got to try and find the time. You know, Frank, he knows, like, everybody. He can call out favors here around the globe, that guy. And I'm excited. I think it's going to be a really good book.
Yep.
I think it's going to be
and
an excellent
you know what?
Book.
That's what he's really good at. He pulls people together for his projects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like...
Yeah.
He kind of just orchestrates and everybody gets in and does a little piece of it, you know, much like our Tactical Perspective series. You know, he got the right people in to do the job. You know, he organized it and we did the work.
Well, that's how we met.
No, only kidding.
That's how we
that's
met.
That's true.
That's how I met
yes,
you and met TJ and met Pepler. I met all you guys through the tactical perspectives through Frank
yep.
Ritchie.
Yep, and that was really some of the most fun I've had in my career
yeah.
in the fire service. Not saying,
yeah.
but it's up there.
Yeah,
it
was
it
fun,
man.
There. It lit my fire back up.
Yep, and Mark Howe, he was in places. I know firefighters in this country that haven't been in some snotty situations that he was in.
Exactly.
You think about it. He's a photographer, and he's in, I mean, some of the nastiest fires.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, exactly. I mean, they had that fire, you know, rolling across the ceiling, blowing out the window over his head, and he was filming it.
Yep.
Good.
We
yeah,
had,
good
we
dude.
Had Control Frank's
dude.
Brothers at that one.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
Frank's two brothers getting a little out of hand. But anyway, what I'd like to talk about tonight is something that I don't think any one of these talk shows have discussed at all, and I think it's an important part of our job that we don't talk about. The overhaul, for several reasons, to make the building safe for when we leave, to prevent rekindles. What's your thoughts on overhaul? You know, do we address it enough? Do sometimes we come up short? Or sometimes do we hurt people because we're so complacent because the fire's out?
You know, I that was the first thing I was going to talk about. You know, overhaul is like, you know, the whole sort of excitement of the fire sort of start, it kind of goes away. And, yeah, complacency can creep in if you're, you know, not careful. You know, but overhaul has a lot to do with, you know, I feel is there's sort of stages of overhaul, you know, making sure the fire is out is obviously one of them. Making sure the building is safe to conduct overhaul is another one. Or it's make it safe enough. You know, maybe it's not safe enough to conduct overhaul, you know, and it's nothing more than a structural carcass, and we're overhauling something that's going in the dumpster tomorrow. And then the other thing, we were talking a little bit about it before when we were talking this afternoon, is the fire watch and, you know, the planning of fire watch, the dangers of fire watch, how long do you fire watch, again, for me, it's always a plan. You need to have a plan. I remember when we would put the fire under control, I used to have an acronym, and I'd write it across the top of the command board, and it was ROS, TOS, DMTD, and it stood for Roll Call, Overhaul, Safety Survey, Salvage, and these are not in order. It's just the way to remember them. I don't remember all of them. I remember, you know, de-escalation was one of them. Mark the building was one of them. Origin and cause. System restoration. There was a whole bunch of them. But I would write this acronym across the top of the command board, and I'd just cross them out as we, you know, conducted them by the time. And the last one, TD, termination and documentation, were the last two. And, you know, it was sort of how, you know, big or small, it applies to every fire.
Yeah, it's, I think, I've watched my people, and what I find a lot of times they're doing, they're, you know, you look and there's smoke still, you know, smoldering in the building, there and there, they're not wearing the equipment, they're pulling ceilings and open up walls, and they don't have a mask on, which is something for a discussion for another day. They don't have safety glasses on. You're pulling ceilings, and in Wallingford, most of our buildings are old. They're loaded with asbestos. They're loaded with insulation, plaster, and they're pulling ceilings, and their eyes are not protected. I can't tell you how many times, including myself, I've gotten something in my eyes during overhaul. And
right.
We need to do a better job of that, because your eyes You only got two of them. And you know what? Mine are pretty important to me, and I would believe everybody else they are just as important. And, you know, like you said, you get complacent. Okay, the fire's out. You know, it's not crazy dangerous, but there are holes in the floor where it's burnt through. There's broken glass from ventilation all over the place, skylights that were broken.
Right.
It's not as safe as we like to think in our minds, and I think it's something we should reinforce as leaders, and obviously I am no longer in that position, mm-hmm. but it's something we need to reinforce quite a bit, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, in your mind, it's because, you know, the fire is no longer, I guess, the major priority as far as you know, the fire is really actively burning. Now we're more into the property conservation, you know. But I think one of the biggest things that I would always look to do is try and get the companies that fought the fire out of the building and get somebody in there, you know, additional companies in to do the overhaul. But before I did that, I would make sure we lit the whole place up. I would make sure we shut all the utilities down in the area because, you know, like sometimes that's, you know, we're fighting a fire and, you know, even, you know, it's a 1 or 2 room fire. And of course we're going to skeletonize that room, but we don't generally turn all the utilities off, you know, in the early stages of that fire. It just doesn't happen. We don't have enough staffing to do that. But I always try and remember that. You know, once we start pulling ceilings and ripping out walls and there's, you know, BX in there and, you know, live wiring in there, you know, that's and gas, you know, these are the things where that can create the biggest problem. So if you get a little bit of a gas leak and you can have an explosion in there, or you get somebody that's using a Halligan tool to open a wall and all of a sudden they hit a live wire and they very slowly and quietly, you know, electrocute themselves while nobody actually sees it happen. I think this is really important stuff. That has to be done because I think you get a lot of injuries during overhaul, and oftentimes it's because you need to minimize the personnel. You should make sure people in there aren't overly beat up from fighting the fire. You know, start to break things down a little bit. Utilize just the personnel that you need. And the other thing I always looked at, and this is especially true in bigger buildings. If you don't have to turn the lights off, don't turn the lights off. Maybe the fire area, shut them down, but egress areas, areas near doors, larger areas, like if you're in a warehouse or something, turn the lights on. You know, people are afraid to turn lights on, and everybody's working in the dark, and it doesn't have to be that way. You know, especially for a limited size fire in a larger area building. You know, so just some of my thoughts to start off.
I agree with that 100%. There's one more other thing I have to think about. Me, I'm a suppression guy. I've never been into investigation or inspection or any of that. Nothing. It's an important part of our job, but it's never been where my focus or my excitement or my passion was the investigation. Sometimes one of the things you want to do, and it's also – if you have junior firefighters, you bring them back in before you start doing, like you say, skeletonize. Bring them in. Look, you know, this is where you were, you know, tell us. And the officer would show them around and talk to them. One of the things that happens, and I know every fire I was in, it felt like it was a mile long to stretch down that hallway. Then when the smoke lifts and you put some floodlights in there, you're like, this is a 9x12 room I was in. Do you know what I mean? But let some of the junior firefighters see exactly where they were, what they were involved in, because when they're laying on their bellies with an officer guiding them that they can't see anything, sometimes it would help them in the future, you know, how to visualize a room, how to understand where they are in an environment. Well, where's the door you came in? Well, it's right over there. Did you know that when you're crawling down the hallway? It's a great teaching time before you start pulling everything apart. And I think that's another good use of overhaul time, mm-hmm. you know, if you want to call it that, but post-fire time. And I think it's a great learning tool for everybody. you know.
Yeah, the teaching end
I'm
of
telling
it.
You, even.
I'm sorry,
go ahead,
Dad. Well, the teach end of it is really important. It reminded me of a test question one time on a civil service exam. One question had to do with a guy who was forcing entry. There was smoke around from behind the door. There was a port of somebody trapped, and he wasn't doing it right. And the answer they were looking for at this point was, you know, let the officer take over, get it done, and teach the guy later. And then they had another question a little bit later in the exam where a guy was doing overhaul, and he was pulling the ceiling, and the light was sparking, and he wasn't doing it right or something like that. And the answer there was stop the operation, shut the power, and show him how to pull the ceiling. So it was all like, you know, in the one sense, you were just beginning to fight the fire. You know, you had to get in there. You had to do things. You don't have time to wait. But in the other one, it was an issue of like, look, now you can train the guy. Now you can show him, like, you know, about building construction and about how the fire actually spread in here and where it went and, you know, the best ways to open up. Like, there's so many teaching opportunities in the overhaul sort of part. You know, you're absolutely right about that.
I agree with that. Again, I'm a teacher by nature. You know, not by education, but by nature. That's I always want to share, and I think that's a great opportunity for many, many people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I worked in a combination department. Sometimes some of those guys that were on the volunteer side never got to be a part of that. And like you said, switching crews, it's a good time to bring them in during overhaul. Let them man the hose, let them man the hooks, and show them what happened in there, where we, you know, because sometimes on the volunteer side, you may never get to a fire in many, many years. Even in all volunteer departments, if it's just the way your work schedule worked, you may miss that, and you're there that day, but you arrived later, and you missed the initial firefight. So it's such a great opportunity. One of the things that I really wanted to talk about is we laughed about it today when we discussed this, rekindle stories. And one of the most important parts or reasons we do overhaul and how important it is to do it thoroughly is to prevent rekindle. I don't know about you. Well, yeah, I do know about you. You have a lot of pride. I have a lot of pride. The last thing I ever wanted to do as a firefighter, company officer, or God forbid, incident commander, come back to a fire that I thought we had out, and it's raging. 6 hours later, 24 hours later, 12 hours later, it's humiliating, because every fire department, especially in, like in Jersey, where you are, you know, Monmouth County, where you have all your classes, how many volunteer fire departments are in that area? 50? 100?
In Monmouth, probably.
Yeah,
probably close to the 70. I'm thinking the 60s.
So there's 70. Don't you think every fire department that you meet after you have a rekindle has something to say, or at least something to think about you and your members?
Oh, of course.
That's one part of it. But you also don't want to have people, now you have a pretty much gutted building you're going back to, with holes in the floor, walls falling down, ceilings falling down, and you're putting your people back in there maybe, or you're just setting up a tower ladder operation and taking care of business, and then you got a collapse hazard or whatever else. But you used a word that I never heard used before, but it's a great word, skeletonized. Describe to me and our listeners what you mean by skeletonized.
Well, the way I looked at it was, you know, when – and this came from, you know, just experience. You know, you come in and you tell a guy, look, I want a hole, get me a hole in this ceiling, you know, take down this ceiling and let's check for fire extension. And you come back and you know, you're going about your business, you come back, you look, the guy's got a hole the size of a shoebox, you know, and you're like, whoa, wait a minute. Well, I always looked at anywhere that fire has touched should be skeletonized. Ceilings down, walls completely open, all the baseboards and what's the stuff that goes? Oh, the moldings, all the moldings off. Like, it's all got to come down. It's going to be renovated anyway. But we don't want any, you know, things out of the closets. You know, don't want any chance of a rekindle. And that's what I mean by skeletonizing. And I think if you got a tired crew, then bring another crew in to skeletonize it. You can tell your people, you know your people, you know when they're beat. You know what? Bring in, and you don't want them to cut corners, so you bring another crew in to skeletonize the room. But I'm a big believer in that.
Yep.
You know, if there was no fire, you know, and again, the more experience you got and your understanding of building construction will tell you where to open, how far to open, sort of what to look for, you know. Once again, building construction is the key to every operation.
Now, let me take that a bit further. Significant fire, multiple rooms of fire, multiple floors of fire. Mm-hmm. What do you do to ensure that that's safe, that you can leave that and it's not going to rekindle?
Well, doing an overhaul in a building like that, that, you know, if it's obvious that building's going to be torn down, we may not be even doing an overhaul in there. We may be doing a, you know, a hydraulic overhaul or a bulldozer overhaul. But we would set up, you know, fire watch. And when we did fire watch, one of the things that I would do, and it was part of my my overhaul operation, that whole acronym was, one of it was the demobilization officer. And I would assign a battalion chief as a demob officer, and we would pick up our equipment that way. But we would also begin to plan how we were going to do a fire watch, how many rigs we were going to keep there, how many we generally never did more than 2 hours on a fire watch, no matter what the temperature was. If it was really, really cold, maybe we'd go to an hour, but we would set up a schedule. That schedule would go to our dispatching center, fire control, and they would let companies know when they are to be, you know, down there. Like, we would tell them, look, when there's, like, you know, like 20 minutes to when they have to leave the firehouse, I want you to pipe in and tell them in 20 minutes you will be dispatched down to the fire scene. And then 20 minutes later, you dispatch them down to the fire scene. And what we would do a lot of times instead of playing, and I'm sure everybody, and we talk about this, everybody understands this, when you, especially when you have multiple companies, is musical rigs. You know, which rig is in which house? I don't know. Engine 3 has engine 7's rig. Engine 5 has engine 9's rig. Engine 9's rig's at the fire scene, but that crew has spare 17, and spare 17 is now in squad 10's quarters, you know, so that is a nightmare. So what we would do is, if we were keeping, say, an engine and a ladder, we would just put whoever the crew was from that engine and ladder on a spare engine and ladder, and we would get that engine and ladder delivered to the fire scene. Those crews would go off those rigs, and they'd go back to quarters, and then at that point, we would probably bring in two rigs for each overhaul session, and they would leave their rigs there, and they would just operate the rigs that were being used for fire watch, and then when their 2 hours up, they take their rigs and go back, and two more rigs would come. We found that was a much easier way of doing it than playing musical rigs, trying to, stretch hose all over, extra hose all over the place. You know, the rigs that are there should stay there. You break them down as much as you possibly can. Maybe your water supplies get sort of shortened up, whereas maybe you had a two-engine water supply. Well, now, because there might have been a water supply closer to the fire building that was being used early on. Well, for the fire watch, let's break down that second water supply. Let's hook these rigs into the first water supply. You know, it's just a matter of trying to take a hard look at how to sort of make your operation more convenient and more efficient, I guess, and streamlined, I guess, would be the best way to look at it when you're doing something like that. But you have to be of the, you know, when you're doing a fire watch, you know, that is not an invitation for the guys to go to sleep inside the rigs. That can't happen. and like, we'll talk about a couple of the rekindles that we had as we go forward here. But, you know, I always found that worked for us, sort of worked the best. You know, some people say, well, just leave the recall guys over at the fire scene for 4 or 5 hours. You know, they make an overtime and all that. I'm like, no, we're not going to beat those guys up for 5 hours just because we can. You know, we'll rotate those guys in too. And again, another thing you're looking to do as an incident commander is, if possible, get rid of the overtime guys as quickly as you can, because it's costing the department money. And, you know, at some point there is a fine line of, like, when you're you know, sort of abusing the overtime privilege, you know. So, you know, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Go ahead.
I agree with that. We have you call people back on my job, they get paid 4 hours. So we try to do is get them on that note, what, like about the overtime abusing the city's money. We try to get them out before their 4 hours, you know, and they're getting paid 4 hours, let's keep them for 4 hours. But similar to you, what we would try to do, depending on the circumstances, the initial attack engine, we'd leave it hooked up to the hydrant, and we'd leave their lines in the building. But that engine crew would leave on a spare, and someone else would man it for the fire watch, because why break it all down? It's a mess anyway. Tomorrow morning is going to be, you know, you got to clean the hose, you got to clean the equipment, you got, so that's already a mess. So it's not a bad idea, we thought, to leave that one hooked up to the hydrant and leave their lines in the building. But what I pissed some people off in my career that I wasn't comfortable, especially if there was some kind of collapse, you know, maybe the roof collapsed into the first floor or second floor, or there was some basement. Once there's some kind of collapse, the odds or the chances that there's something smoldering in that 4 foot of pile of stuff on the floor made me uncomfortable. And I would like to leave a fire watch there. And sometimes I would leave it, you know, more than 2 hours. And I know people didn't love me for it, but I would go out, either to, depending on time of day, I would go to McDonald's, get a bag of hamburgers and some drinks in the summertime. But I would, you know, if it's the middle of the night, I would bring them coffee and donuts from Dunkin' Donuts, a box of Joe. Here you go, guys. You know, keep an eye on the building. Every once in a while, I'd go in and take a look to see. Because there's always, like a night like tonight, or like last night, it's 12 degrees. Steam's coming out everywhere, and you can smell smoke everywhere. Is that really steam, or is that smoke coming from the walls?
Right.
So go in, take a check, because it's important. We are there to put out fires, but we have to ensure that we put it out so it doesn't reignite tomorrow, especially on the bigger buildings that are multiple taxpayers, multiple apartment buildings, that we didn't lose 5 apartments and then the next day or 6 hours later, we didn't lose the rest of them because we missed something that was smoldering somewhere.
Yeah.
That
or we
being
would,
said,
we would,
no, go ahead.
Or we were too, we wanted to get back to the firehouse too quickly.
Yeah, 5 degrees out, I get it. But guess what?
Mm-hmm.
You signed up for this. You know, but there's also the other thing. You do get called back for a rekindle. It's not always a rekindle. Sometimes the first fire had help, and sometimes that rekindle had help. And you know what I mean by help. Now, here's where that hydraulic overhaul becomes a problem. Not that it's a problem. You have to do it. So you set up a couple tower ladders, and you drown that building for 2 or 3 hours. There's not a chance, or I wouldn't say there's not a chance in hell, because there's some pretty good arson investigators out of there. But we are destroying any kind of evidence that we're going to get that person that may have torched that building. But, you know, that's, you stand there with like a scale on one side. We got to get the fire out. On the other side, we want to catch this bastard because he's putting our lives at risk and the citizens of our community at risk. So in reality, our hydraulic overhaul with tower ladders and master screens is destroying, I'm going to say, most of the evidence in that building, and that bastard will walk. So that's the sad part of doing an overly efficient overhaul. But I think it's really, really important. We don't want to come back. We don't want to lose a block. We don't want to lose an apartment building. Even somebody's house. You know, it was a room in contents or 2 rooms in contents. You know, if we do a good overhaul, it's going to cost them less money to get the house back, or less time anyway, because
right.
the insurance company hopefully is paying for the repairs. They may
mm-hmm.
gut the house. But it's our responsibility to leave them a house that can be restored. You agree?
Yeah, if we can. If we can, yeah. Yeah. But I also think we have to be able to make a decision that if the building is never going to be occupied again and for a long period of time, we probably don't belong in there doing overhaul.
Correct. No, I'm not disagreeing with that, and that's where you talked about your hydraulic overhaul, your tower ladders,
mm-hmm.
you know, your master streams. You drown the shit out of it. We're not coming back, especially
right.
a week like this, these, you know, last 3 days. It's been hovering around zero with 20 or 30 mile-an-hour winds. Yeah, it was. You had a big fire, knocked the big fire down, and you went home, but now you're going to be back for another 6 hours tomorrow. That's not good. That's not healthy.
No.
You know, maybe the other
no.
ships, but, the other ships get some work.
Yeah, let them get
so
it.
So now I'm
know,
ready to
down
come.
The ass too, right?
Now I'm ready for some of your rekindle stories. I'm ready for some of your
well,
rekindle stories now.
Well, it's funny because one of them had to do with an arson job. Another one was clearly people wanted to get out of there as quickly as they could. So the first one, I was a battalion chief, and we had this fire in Union City on Central Avenue, and it was not too far from the firehouse. And it was sort of like it was a three-story building. It was surrounded by another three-story and a two-story on the one side. And the fire was on the first floor, and it had spread to the second floor. But, yeah, we did really, really nice job. It was a vacant. We did a pretty nice job knocking the thing down, and I thought we did a really thorough job of overhaul, right? So we leave, and we don't – I didn't think we need – we did fire watch for a little bit, and then we let it go. And must have been about – I was a battalion, like I said, and it must have been maybe about 1:30 in the morning. I hear the address come in again. Now, I'm in the 2nd Battalion. This fire is in the 1st Battalion. And the deputy was this guy named Bobby Hodge. The battalion down there was a guy named Marty Mandel. And we get on the scene. And the whole third floor is fully involved. I mean, sailing stem to stern, man. And I started going because I just heard them say reported fire, reported top floor fire. I'm going, oh, he's going to call a second. I'm on my way. So I'm going down there, and I'm walking down Central Avenue from the north, and Marty Mandel is out in front of the building, and Bobby Hodges, the deputy, is walking up from the south side. And he stands there, and he goes, Marty, what happened here? And you had to be there. It was funny, but, you know, we ladder piped the crap out of it. And, you know, the next morning, the investigators all came in. And there was this one investigator who was a real dick. And he said, oh, this was a – and he didn't even investigate it. And he was saying, this is a classic rekindle. And I'm saying, there's no way this was a rekindle. Classic rekindle, right? So – what he didn't know was as we went up and we were going up, we were working off of the two-story buildings and the three-story building. When they got up to the roof of the two-story building, there was a guy on the roof that had torched it and jumped out the window and landed on the second floor roof and broke his ankle and couldn't get up. So we had gotten him off the roof, but this guy didn't know that the next morning. And he came in and he was declaring it was the, you know, the worst case of a rekindle he's ever seen, the whole thing. And we were like, well, you know, if you ask us what happened, we'll tell you. And we told him exactly what happened. And, you know, he was, you know, a tail between his legs. And, you know, Bobby Hodge wanted to kill him when he said that because he thought he was going to tell that to the press. And he was completely wrong. But, yeah, we found the guy who touched the top floor on the second floor roof because he jumped out the window. So that was the first one. And, well, here was the other thing. When we left the police there. And the cop obviously either left or fell asleep in his car, and next thing we know, we're getting called back to a fully involved top floor. So
yeah,
that,
but you
was,
know
that
what?
Was the lesson.
To give the cop the benefit of the doubt, you know, guy could get up to the, you know, could easily get in, you know, other ways and different ways, and the cop not see him, especially someone who's, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Sitting in a patrol.
I agree, but for it to be fully involved when we get there, the entire top floor going, tells me that cop wasn't paying attention to the building.
Yeah, that's
true.
That's
what it tells you.
That's true.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway. So,
I think, I personally think, even in, before you go to the next story, just going on with that fire watch, I think it's worth
yeah.
it. I really do. Even, you know what, and I get it. If you take in Monmouth County or Long Island or where I live in Connecticut, where it's 100% volunteer, I get it. These people got to go to work tomorrow. And, yes, it's 5 degrees. But I think fire watch is worth it. You know, you keep three guys there. You know, with a charged hose line, it also gives, and I don't know what the laws are in New Jersey, but in Connecticut and in New York, as long as the fire department maintains control of that building, investigators can go in and out of there without warrants. They're still, we still own that building. And I think keeping a line and a rig on scene helps with the investigation in the long run. And, yes,
mm-hmm.
I know if you're a volunteer, it's hard to say we need the three guys that have to stay here. You know, don't take the first in companies, but someone has to stay there if you're not. I mean, you're always going to have some kind of doubt, but if you're not 99% sure you got everything, I think fire watch is important. I think it could save you a lot of embarrassment, save a lot of property, and it's a lot of lives.
Even if you leave a rig there and move the line to, and supply it from a hydrant, you know, especially if it's a first floor or a two-story building, you know. But you're right. The what you were talking about was Michigan versus Pilot. That is that's a law that that governs all of the need to maintain control of the building if you want to come back and do any kind of investigation. You have to maintain control. It's based on Michigan versus Tyler. In that one, a fire department left the scene and came back the next day, 2 days later, and a week later, and a judge ruled it an illegal search and seizure. And he said you can remain for a reasonable amount of time, but once you leave, you need to have a consent or a warrant to go back into the building. And a reasonable amount of time means whatever you think you need to do. When we had the Chart House fire in 1998 or 97, we were on a scene for 3 days doing the investigation.
Yep.
So, you know, yeah, the Michigan versus Pilot is the case study for that guideline.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I learned something tonight. Thank you very much.
See that?
So,
it's in Fire Ground Strategy.
Oh, my God. I have to reread it. Actually, a friend of mine just got promoted to lieutenant in Wallingford, and I'm giving him your full contact leadership book. I'm giving him Tom Brennan's new collection. Well, it's not new anymore. It's probably about 6 years old. From the back page, Random Thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
On the shitter. Random Thoughts. I used to have a three-ring binder, and I used to save the back pages. And I'll never forget when they came out with that. I was so thrilled. I said, this is the greatest collection because it's 1 to 2 pages of just random thoughts. I'll say random wisdom. Tom Brennan was awesome. And that book, you know, for the average firefighter, I think it's perfect because of the short attention span most of us have. You know, 10 minutes when you're on the bowl, read a good story about ventilation, a good story about size up, a good, you know, ladder positioning, whatever it was. So I'm giving them those two books.
Yeah, Tommy Brennan was the best, man, when it came to that stuff, man. He always had a good story about something.
Yep. But back to overhaul and to rekindle, any firefighter will tell you that you want to damage their ego, you know, have them rekindle. So it's up to you, and it's your responsibility to make sure there isn't a rekindle. That being said, though, like I said before, when there's a collapse and there's 3 feet of debris in piles, it's almost impossible to ensure that there's nothing. So the next step is fire watch to make sure that that doesn't happen. Then maybe tomorrow you do a better job of overhaul, you know, when it's light and it's a little warmer and fresh crews.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you set up the ladder pipes again or the deck guns again, but you don't want to come back. It's a tarnish on your department. In volunteer communities, you get contributions to keep you going, to buy new fire trucks, to buy new equipment, or even if it's just the new jacket you wear with your company logo on it. That money comes from the public. You burn down a couple buildings and you look like jerks, you know, you're not going to get them to donate to you. It's like,
exactly.
What are these guys are shoemakers. You know,
we had
on our side. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You had another story about rekindle.
I was going to tell you this was, this one I was not very, very happy about. We had a two-story frame fire on the top floor, flat roof, in the cockloft. So, you know, we got up, you know, pretty much gutted the whole top floor. All the ceilings were gone. We opened up the whole front facade of the building, and we, you know, playing some streams in there as we were bringing the lines up. And so it's called out, and we go into fire watch mode. And I go back to quarters, and I delegate to one of the battalions. I said to him, look, you know, you're going to leave two companies here. And I said, you know, they cannot terminate this incident. All right, they're going to have to keep an eye on the building. You know, if you want me to do it till the morning, do it till the morning. But, you know, listen, I trust you. If you think that you think the scene is cold, then, you know, you can terminate it when you see fit. But not right now. Like, give it a few hours. So if the companies felt that it was cold, their job is to call the battalion. The battalion can make the call to terminate the incident. They didn't have to call me, but they had to call a battalion, right? So obviously sometime around 3 or 4 in the morning, they call a battalion. And the battalion gives a quick look through and, you know, says, okay, we'll terminate the incident. And maybe it was about 3:30 in the morning, whatever it happened to be. At about 5 o'clock in the morning, I hear the same address coming in, report of a rekindle. I get down there, the whole top floor is going, the building next door is lighting off. The first one went to 2 alarms, this one went to 3 alarms, and we just went defensive on it. It didn't extend anywhere, but, you know, I walked down there, and I said, and I remembered the quote from Bobby Hodge to Marty Mandel, Marty, what happened here? And when I got down there, and the battalion was down there, it was going, it was out, man. It was out. I go, Bob, I didn't say anything about me. What happened here? And I said, listen, listen, part of the job, you know, it happens. It happens. If we had lost 3 or 4 buildings, I really would have pissed at them. But, you know, the building that was burning was already, you know, the whole top floor was gutted already, you know, and we were able to get there quick enough to stop it from spreading to the 2 exposures, which were only about 3 feet away, you know. As a matter of fact, the first 2 lines at that fire were 2.5s to protect the exposures and sweep the cockloft from the street while we were setting everything else up. Because I was like, you know what, and I remember them they were going to go in with a line. And I said to them, no, stay down here, stay here. Let's knock this whole thing down we had a telesquirt there, and we used the 2.5s. We knocked it down. But, you know, it was an issue where the guys were not, they weren't thorough enough. The battalion chief didn't give it as good a look as he should have. Everybody was cold, and he let everybody go home, go back to quarters, and we had to rekindle, you know. It is what it is.
Yep.
You know, especially
for me
cold,
as an incident commander. Go ahead, Chief.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking stories now. I remember one chief, I got recalled on Christmas Eve at about 3 o'clock in the morning. And I lived down in Manalapa at the time, which is about 40 miles away from Union City. And I get up there, and the deputy, and it's about, like, maybe 5 or 10 below at the wind chill. And they got the babysitting three buildings that are completely burned out. And the deputy says to me, I don't want them sitting in the rigs. I want them in the buildings keeping an eye on stuff. And I'm like, if that's what you want, it's just friggin' freezing out, fine. I said, I suggest you bring another company here. He goes, no. I had one company. So I had them, they had to rotate in each building. And I told him, I said, look, this is what the deputy said. So you know why he's got me here freezing? Because he don't trust you guys. So now I got to stay here and freeze because I'm the overtime deputy, and I'm standing here freezing my ass off out in the street at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, you know. But, yeah, listen, especially at night, if you're in doubt, run a fire watch overnight till it gets light out. Once it's light out, it's infinitely safer to work inside or around these buildings. And the other end of it is do another safety survey, you know, before we go back in, because conditions might have changed overnight. You know?
Absolutely. And you know what? As a good deputy or a good battalion chief in my case, you know, you're the incident commander, you know your people. You know your people. I have Lieutenant so-and-so. And if I tell him to stay till he thinks it's good, I'm going to feel good if he stays there for an hour or so and says, you know what, we got this, boss. I'm going to feel comfortable. Yeah. Another officer who doesn't want to be there in the first place, I'm not going to be as confident. I'm going to come back. I'm going to go in the building with him, and let's take a walk around. It's just human nature. People have different levels of motivation, and different temperatures are going to motivate people to different levels. The last 3 days, there's no motivation to be there other than just to do your job and make sure you don't light the building again. When it's 100 degrees out or 90 degrees out, it's the same. It sucks. You know, a typical day in the 70s, it's not really that big a deal. You sit on the bumper of your engine, you have a cup of coffee, you talk to the neighbors if it's daytime hours. Every, you know, 10 minutes or so, you take a walk through the building, you know, with a can, and you have a charged hose line in there, and you take a look. But all those things, as a boss, you have to take into account. You read any books. Nobody talks about people's motivational level at these type incidents. But
no.
If you've been around, they're all real. I know my guys. They look at me. I tell them I need somebody to stay for a couple hours. You know, and especially when you look at the overtime crews, you tell them, hey, you guys want to stay? Yeah, I'll stay. I'll stay as long as you want me to stay. Okay, let's put those guys there. They don't care. And, you know, but other people, you know what? You took a beating. You went through 3 bottles at this fire. The streets are covered in ice. My turnout gear is soaked and covered in ice. You know, you can't ask those people to stay here. But in some, like the community I live in, there's only so many volunteers here where I live. And, you know, someone has to do it. And you may not be loved when you, as the chief of department or, you know, company commander or whatever, we're staying. They're not going to love you, but they're going to understand and they're going to respect you for that. If you say, okay, guys, I know you're cold, let's go home, and it relights, and one of your, like where I live, you know, 6,000 people live where I live. You know, mm-hmm. You lose a house because you left. You know, guess what? You know them. I'm sorry I burned your house down because I was cold. You know, it's just, I don't know. You can't take shortcuts. You have to do your job. And that is part of your job. Not to say that we can't overlook something. No matter how thorough we are, we can overlook something. We could miss an ember in the walls or in a pile of stuff.
Right.
In a lot of communities, old wood frame buildings. You know, it's in the walls. It's in a pile of stuff, you know, in the basement. And it's not smoking. And it gets enough air and it gets enough stuff to get going. You know what? I understand you're going to miss it, but you can't take shortcuts so that it's missed. You know, you as long as you you did your level best, you can go home and look at yourself in the mirror and say, oh, well, you know.
Yes.
I think
I
beat a dead horse on that one.
Yeah, you can't half-ass it, man. You know, if you extend the effort to put the fire out, or allegedly put the fire out, you got to extend the same effort to make sure it's completely out. It's the end. That's why we're there. It's why we do what we do.
Yep. I'm gonna change courses a little bit, but it's kind of along the line of the same subject. I'll never forget one time I was in overtime. And we had a fire on the second floor, really nice house. I mean, really nice, nicer than I'll ever live in, that's for sure. But, you know, it was about 4,000 square feet. There was a dryer fire on the second floor. You know, we get there. First an engine stretched the line to the second floor, put the dryer fire out. But you know how dryers smell after they burn?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a big puddle in the stairway up there where we were, and the house stinks. So I go to again, it's not my shift, and I have to reemphasize this. I go to the lieutenant on the truck. I go, I want you, you know, go up, get your crew up there, get that dryer out and put it on the front lawn. No, we got to take two doors off the hinges. We got to, and I just stood there. I didn't say a word. My mouth was just open, and I just stared at him. And I watched him walk away, and he got his two guys, and they were going to get it. The engine company, which was guys from my ship who were also on overtime, they were already carrying it out the door and already took the two doors off the hinges. They were already bringing it out on the front lawn. Because, first of all, cause they know that's what I would expect. But second of all, they're good people. They care. They love their job, and they know they're there to do it, you know, and hopefully part of it is they wanted to make me proud that they did that on their own without talking to me, but I don't know that. You know, of course, I don't have the conversation. I just said, nice job, guys. You know, and I never said anything to Lieutenant, but he knows just by how my warmth to him in the firehouse is definitely different after that. Like, are you kidding me?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I just couldn't believe he and said that. And it was in the middle of the day, too. It was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And the people who – and it was, you know, a warm summer day, not a hot. And but the thing that really got me about it, the people who owned that house owned a deli in our town right near from the firehouse, and they brought 6-foot heroes to the firehouse to thank us for the job we did. So it's like, you know – these are the people whose homes we're protecting. And it's like,
yeah,
you know, why would you not? So anyway, that's a whole different story. That's kind of a more of a leadership discussion, but it kind of hooks.
Yeah, that is a leadership discussion.
To the overhaul question, do it right. Yeah, the house is on fire. Yeah, the dryer fire is out. But you leave that sopping mess in their house, you know, It's gonna stink anyway. But why make it worse?
Mm-hmm.
And someone's gonna have to remove it anyway.
That's one of those things you look at. You know, you ever hear the that saying that the first impression that you make is the most important? That's not the way it works in the fire service. When you have a fire, it's usually the last impression that's the most important. How you leave these people after the job, you know. Letting them know what they need to do, telling them where to get fire reports, treating their stuff as if it was yours, you know, that's the stuff they're going to remember. So the last impression they have of us is always much more important to the people than it is to, you know, it's just different. It's just different. What
absolutely. I have a picture from a fire we had in an apartment building. It was 4 stories, maybe 5 stories, mostly elderly. It wasn't like, you know, there was no care there, no help there, but everybody that lived there was late 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, so it turned out to be a fatal fire in one of the apartments. And I have a picture of one of my guys. He's actually a lieutenant now, one of the Wallingford firefighters. In his full gear, he's got a woman, obviously late 70s, early 80s, and he's walking her down the street. He's got his air pack on, you know, and he's walking her down the street towards a bus they had there to put these people in while we were mopping up from the fire. You know, and we had a fatal fire, you know, so we brought the victim out, did all, you know, the firework. And I use that picture as the last picture in almost every presentation I do. Teddy Roosevelt said that no one cares how much you know till they know how much you care. And then I do a little statement about, you know what, this is what it's about. We're here to take care of these people. It's not as exciting as cutting a roof or stretching a hose line or doing forcible entry, but it is the most important part of the job, taking care of our citizens. And that picture is my favorite. It's Lieutenant Eric Maron. He was a firefighter at the time, but I will never forget. You know, I use that picture all the time because it speaks volumes about who we should be. You know,
well, listen,
and
we only exist for one reason, man. You know, we only exist for one reason, because there's people outside the firehouse doors that depend on it. That's the only reason we exist. If those people weren't there, we wouldn't exist.
Yep. Yep. And you know what? Right now I am having a sad moment about retiring. I miss all this stuff we've just been talking about tonight. But let me tell you something. Last night when it was zero, the night before when it was zero, I was so happy to be snug in my bed and not out on the highway at an extrication, or not standing in front of a burning house or burning apartment building. I was very, very glad I was retired. And not to say I didn't like my job, and not to say even when I was doing it, when my fingers hurt, I enjoyed doing it then. But let me tell you something. I was so glad. I was home. I had my wood stove going. The house was warm. You know, I thought of the guys, but I was glad I didn't have to be there. You know, so.
No, I hear you.
It was a great career.
At some point, it's just too freaking cold. I've done my part. You know, I paid my dues.
Yep, and you know what? It was definitely worth it. But
Do it again.
It's okay. Actually, I posted something on Facebook the other day about one of the things I miss is doing. I didn't have to do it. The companies went out and did pub ed in the grammar schools and stuff. And every once in a while, I would go with them. You know, and I absolutely loved the little six-year-old kids. You know, they were so excited to see us and see the fire engine and everything. It was. It made me laugh and it made me smile. So I posted that in Facebook that I missed that. And where I live is a very small volunteer department, and the chief of department says, "You can come with us this October." And I said, "I'm in." You know, I'll dress
there
up,
you go.
Put on my turnout gear. You know, I don't have my turnout gear anymore, but I'm sure they'll give me a set. In summary, I have to say, overhaul is more important than we think it is, for many reasons. And paying attention to it as a boss to make sure nobody gets hurt. And I'm talking even the minor things, stuff in your eyes. I think, and you and I talked about this today, maybe wearing a dust mask or an N95 mask when you're in there doing overhaul, because you and I talked about the black snots running out of your nose after a fire. You know, those days are over.
Yeah.
And we should think about letting our guys go in and do overhaul.
They should be over.
Well,
they're not.
They're not. And now you brought up a subject that Charlie talks about all the time, facial hair. You know, it's like, oh, it's okay. It's not okay to have a beard with SCBA on. You know, we still can't get past that. Yeah. And it's a law. know, it's a law, and we still have volunteer firefighters, because I don't think there's any career department allowing anybody to come, because, you know, they got the confidence
no,
for that.
No, I would say no. I'd be very surprised if that was the case. But, yeah, I
you
see
know,
people coming to the
we
fire
did...
academy, you know, and I see people coming to the drill ground, and we tell them, look, you can't, you know, you can't be involved in drill ground activities if you got that beard. So either you go inside and shave it, or
yeah, you know. But you know, I think we should be smart.
And
enough.
We're the bad
now. You know, we have. Yeah, right. You're absolutely the bad guy. You know, cover your mouth and nose during overhaul. You know, especially my department, we have ambulances, so there's masks all over the place. You can put on a dust mask while you're doing overhaul. Safety glasses, you know, we tried for a while helmets with the built-in safety glasses that slid down, not like the Burks. They were actually safety glasses that went up inside the helmet and then covered, but they sucked.
Oh,
they
okay.
didn't work. But, you know, trying to protect people's eyes. And I think it's important. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to go to a fire and have something get stuck in your eye and get an infection or just getting your cornea cut. You know,
nah, you, let's,
I don't know.
It's not worth it. It's not worth it, brother.
You know, and I'll take one more step about gear and waist belts. They're there for a reason. You know, I've been backpacking almost my entire adult life, and backpacks, they always put waist straps on for a reason. It puts all the weight on your butt and hips rather than your neck and back. You know, so I think waist straps are definitely underutilized too. I know you look cool, but it's not worth it. But anyway, getting back to my summary, do a thorough and complete overhaul so you don't have a rekindle. If you can't be 100% sure, leave a fire watch there for at least a couple of hours, if not more, and then come back in the morning if it's nighttime and take another look around. Agreed? Disagree, Chief?
Yep. I think we said it all here tonight, Duff.
I do, too. And what I want you to do after we sign off here is give Lee a hug, tell her I said Happy New Year, and enjoy your evening. To all the other listeners out there, I hope you picked up a little something tonight on the subject of overhaul and preventing rekindles and taking care of yourself. Most of you have my email. If you have any questions, for me or Anthony, send us an email or send us something, and we'll try to get back to you. Until we see you again, stay safe. Chief Avila, till next time, and buy American when you get the chance.
Yeah, happy anniversary there to you and this is Duffy.
Yeah, I better go down and say hello to her now. But, no, we celebrated last night. Like I said, we went out to a great Northern Italian restaurant. It was awesome. I had seafood fra diavolo, a couple of glasses of wine. It was wonderful.
There you go. Beautiful. All right, brother.
And again, till
so
next
good
month,
to hear your voice.
Stay safe. Chief Villa,
yep.
You be well, and I'll see you next time in person. We'll be in Missouri at Missouri University.
Exactly. All right, brother. Take care. Take care, everybody out there. Be safe.
Good night.
Stay warm.